The white dove shall find herself delivered from the pestiferous gerfalcons that persecute her, and in the arms of her beloved mate. For such is the decree of the sage Merlin, arch-enchanter of enchanters." As soon as Don Quixote had read the inscription on the parchment, he perceived clearly that it referred to the disenchantment of Dulcinea, and returning hearty thanks to heaven that he had with so little danger achieved so grand an exploit as to restore to their former complexion the countenances of those venerable duennas, he advanced towards the Duke and Duchess, who had not yet come to themselves, and taking the Duke by the hand, he said, "Be of good cheer, worthy sir, be of good cheer. It's nothing at all. The adventure is now over, and without any harm done, as the inscription fixed on this post shows plainly." The Duke came to himself slowly and like one recovering consciousness after a heavy sleep, and the Duchess and all who had fallen prostrate about the garden did the same, with such demonstrations of wonder and amazement that they would have almost persuaded one that what they pretended so adroitly in jest had happened to them in reality. The Duke read the placard with half-shut eyes, and then ran to embrace Don Quixote with open arms, declaring him to be the best knight that had ever been seen in any age. Sancho kept looking about for the distressed one, to see what her face was like without the beard, and if she was as fair as her elegant person promised. But they told him that the instant Clavileño descended flaming through the air and came to the ground, the whole band of duennas with the Trifaldi vanished, and that they were already shaved and without a stump left. The Duchess asked Sancho how he had fared on that long journey, to which Sancho replied, "I felt, Señora, that we were flying through the region of fire, as my master told me, and I wanted to uncover my eyes for a bit, but my master, when I asked leave to uncover myself, would not let me. But as I have a little bit of curiosity about me, and a desire to know what is forbidden and kept from me, quietly and without anyone seeing me, I drew aside the handkerchief covering my eyes ever so little, close to my nose, and from underneath looked towards the earth. And it seemed to me that it was altogether no bigger than a grain of mustard seed, and that the men walking on it were little bigger than hazelnuts. So you may see how high we must have got to then." To this the Duchess said, "Sancho, my friend, mind what you are saying. It seems you could not have seen the earth, but only the men walking on it. For if the earth looked to you like a grain of mustard seed, and each man like a hazelnut, one man alone would have covered the whole earth." "That is true," said Sancho, "but for all that I got a glimpse of a bit of one side of it and saw it all." "Take care, Sancho," said the Duchess. "With a bit of one side one does not see the whole of what one looks at." "I don't understand that way of looking at things," said Sancho. "I only know that your ladyship will do well to bear in mind that as we were flying by enchantment, so I might have seen the whole earth and all the men by enchantment, whatever way I looked. And if you won't believe this, no more will you believe that, uncovering myself nearly to the eyebrows, I saw myself so close to the sky that there was not a palm and a half between me and it. And by everything that I can swear by, Señora, it is mighty great. And it so happened we came by where the seven sisters are, what we call the seven young goats in my country, and as in my youth I was a goat herd, as soon as I saw them I felt a longing to be among them for a little, and if I had not given way to it I think I'd have burst. So I come and take, and what do I do? Without saying anything to anybody, not even to my master, softly and quietly, I got down from Clavileño and amused myself with the goats, which are like violets, like flowers, for nigh 3/4 of an hour, and Clavileño never stirred or moved from one spot."
"And while the good Sancho was amusing himself with the goats," said the Duke, "how did Señor Quixote amuse himself?"
To which Don Quixote replied,
"As all these things and such like occurrences are out of the ordinary course of nature, it is no wonder that Sancho says what he does. For my own part, I can only say that I did not uncover my eyes either above or below, nor did I see the sky or earth or sea or shore. It is true I felt that I was passing through the region of the air, and even that I touched that of fire, but that we passed farther I cannot believe. For the region of fire being between the heaven of the moon and the last region of the air, we could not have reached that heaven where the seven goats Sancho speaks of are, without being burned. And as we are not burned, either Sancho is lying or Sancho is dreaming."
"I am neither lying nor dreaming," said Sancho.
Only ask me the tokens of those same goats, and you'll see by that whether I'm telling the truth or not.
Tell us them, then, Sancho, said the Duchess. Two of them, said Sancho, are green, two blood red, two blue, and one a mixture of all colours.
Odd sort of goat, that, said the Duke. In this earthly region of ours we have no such colours, I mean goats of such colours.
That's very plain, said Sancho. Of course there must be a difference between the goats of heaven and the goats of earth.
Tell me, Sancho, said the Duke, did you see any he-goat among those goats?
No, senor, said Sancho, but I have heard say that none ever passed the horns of the moon.
They did not care to ask him anything more about his journey, for they saw he was in the vein to go rambling all over the heavens, giving an account of everything that went on there, without having ever stirred from the garden. Such, in short, was the end of the adventure of the distressed duenna, which gave the Duke and Duchess laughing matter not only for the time being, but for all their lives, and Sancho something to talk about for ages, if he lived so long. But Don Quixote, coming close to his ear, said to him, Sancho, as you would have us believe what you saw in heaven, I require you to believe me as to what I saw in the cave of Montesinos. I say no more.
Chapter 42 Of the counsels which Don Quixote gave Sancho Panza before he set out to govern the island, together with other well-considered matters. The Duke and Duchess were so well pleased with the successful and droll result of the adventure of the distressed one, that they resolved to carry on the joke, seeing what a fit subject they had to deal with for making it all pass for reality. So having laid their plans and given instructions to their servants and vassals how to behave to Sancho in his government of the promised island, the next day, that following Clavileño's flight, the Duke told Sancho to prepare and get ready to go and be governor, for his islanders were already looking for him as for the showers of May. Sancho made him an obeisance and said, "Ever since I came down from heaven, and from the top of it beheld the earth and saw how little it is, the great desire I had to be a governor has been partly cooled in me. For what is there grand in being ruler on a grain of mustard seed, or what dignity or authority in governing half a dozen men about as big as hazelnuts? For, so far as I could see, there were no more on the whole earth. If your lordship would be so good as to give me ever so small a bit of heaven, were it no more than half a league, I'd rather have it than the best island in the world."
"Recollect, Sancho," said the Duke, "I cannot give a bit of heaven, no, not so much as the breadth of my nail, to anyone. Rewards and favours of that sort are reserved for God alone. What I can, I give you, and that is a real, genuine island, compact, well-proportioned, and uncommonly fertile and fruitful, where, if you know how to use your opportunities, you may, with the help of the world's riches, gain those of heaven."
"Well, then," said Sancho, "let the island come, and I'll try and be such a governor that, in spite of scoundrels, I'll go to heaven. And it's not from any craving to quit my own humble condition or better myself, but from the desire I have to try what it tastes like to be a governor."
"If you once make trial of it, Sancho," said the Duke, "you'll eat your fingers off after the government, so sweet a thing is it to command and be obeyed. Depend upon it, when your master comes to be emperor, as he will beyond a doubt from the course his affairs are taking, it will be no easy matter to wrest the dignity from him, and he will be sore and sorry at heart to have been so long without becoming one."
"Senor," said Sancho, "it is my belief it's a good thing to be in command, even if it's only over a drove of cattle."
"May I be buried with you, Sancho," said the Duke, "but you know everything. I hope you'll make as good a governor as your sagacity promises, and that is all I have to say. And now remember, tomorrow is the day you must set out for the government of the island, and this evening they will provide you with the proper attire for you to wear, and all things requisite for your departure."
"Let them dress me as they like," said Sancho. "However I'm dressed, I'll be Sancho Panza."
"That's true," said the Duke, "but one's dress must be suited to the office or rank one holds, for it would not do for a jurist to go dressed like a soldier or a soldier like a priest. You, Sancho, shall go partly as a lawyer, partly as a captain, for in the island I'm giving you arms are needed as much as letters, and letters as much as arms."
"Of letters I know but little," said Sancho, "for I don't even know the ABC. But it is enough for me to have the Christus in my memory to be a good governor. As for arms, I'll handle those they give me till I drop, and then, God be my help."
"With so good a memory," said the Duke, "Sancho cannot go wrong in anything." Here Don Quixote joined them, and learning what passed and how soon Sancho was to go to his government, he, with the duke's permission, took him by the hand, and retired to his room with him for the purpose of giving him advice as to how he was to demean himself in his office. As soon as they had entered the chamber, he closed the door after him, and almost by force made Sancho sit down beside him, and in a quiet tone thus addressed him.
"I give infinite thanks to heaven, friend Sancho, that before I have met with any good luck, fortune has come forward to meet thee. I, who counted upon my good fortune to discharge the recompense of thy services, find myself still waiting for advancement, while thou, before the time, and contrary to all reasonable expectation, seest thyself blessed in the fulfilment of thy desires. Some will bribe, beg, solicit, rise early, entreat, persist without attaining the object of their suit, while another comes, and without knowing why or wherefore, finds himself invested with the place or office so many have sued for. And here it is that the common saying, 'There is good luck as well as bad luck in suits,' applies. Thou, who, to my thinking, art beyond all doubt a dullard, without early rising or night-watching or taking any trouble with the mere breath of knight-errantry that has breathed upon thee, seest thyself without more ado governor of an island, as though it were a mere matter of course. This I say, Sancho, that thou attribute not the favour thou hast received to thine own merits, but give thanks to heaven that disposes matters beneficently, and secondly thanks to the great power the profession of knight-errantry contains in itself. With a heart, then, inclined to believe what I have said to thee, attend, my son, to thy Cato here, who would counsel thee and be thy pole-star and guide to direct and pilot thee to a safe haven out of this stormy sea wherein thou art about to engulf thyself. For offices and great trusts are nothing else but a mighty gulf of troubles. First of all, my son, thou must fear God, for in the fear of him is wisdom, and being wise thou canst not err in aught. Secondly, thou must keep in view what thou art, striving to know thyself, the most difficult thing to know that the mind can imagine. If thou knowest thyself, it will follow thou wilt not puff thyself up like the frog that strove to make himself as large as the ox. If thou dost, the recollection of having kept pigs in thine own country will serve as the ugly feet for the wheel of thy folly. "That's the truth," said Sancho, "but that was when I was a boy. Afterwards, when I was something more of a man, it was geese I kept, not pigs. But to my thinking that has nothing to do with it, for all who are governors don't come of kingly stock."
"True," said Don Quixote, "and for that reason those who are not of noble origin should take care that the dignity of the office they hold be accompanied by a gentle civility, which wisely managed will save them from the sneers of malice that no station escapes. Glory in thy humble birth, Sancho, and be not ashamed of saying thou art peasant-born, for when it is seen thou art not ashamed, no one will set himself to put thee to the blush. And pride thyself rather on being one of lowly virtue than a lofty sinner. Countless are they who, born of mean parentage, have risen to the highest dignities, pontifical and imperial, and of the truth of this I could give thee instances enough to weary thee. Remember, Sancho, if thou make virtue thy aim, and take pride in doing virtuous actions, thou wilt have no cause to envy those who have princely and lordly ones. For blood is an inheritance, but virtue an acquisition, and virtue has in itself alone a worth that blood does not possess. This being so, if perchance any one of thy kinsfolk should come to see thee when thou art in thine island, thou art not to repel or slight him, but on the contrary to welcome him, entertain him, and make much of him. For in doing so thou wilt be approved of heaven, which is not pleased that any should despise what it hath made, and wilt comply with the laws of well-ordered nature. If thou carriest thy wife with thee, and it is not well for those that administer governments to be long without their wives, teach and instruct her, and strive to smooth down her natural roughness. For all that may be gained by a wise governor may be lost and wasted by a boorish, stupid wife. If, perchance, thou art left a widower, a thing which may happen, and in virtue of thy office seekest a consort of higher degree, choose not one to serve thee like a hook or a fishing-rod for bribes. For verily, I tell thee, for all the judge's wife receives, the husband will be held accountable at the general calling to account,
where he will have to repay in death fourfold items that in life he regarded as naught. Never go by arbitrary law, which is so much favoured by ignorant men who plume themselves on cleverness. Let the tears of the poor man find with thee more compassion, but not more justice, than the pleadings of the rich. Strive to lay bare the truth, as well amid the promises and presents of the rich man as amid the sobs and entreaties of the poor. When equity may and should be brought into play, press not the utmost rigour of the law against the guilty, for the reputation of the stern judge stands not higher than that of the compassionate. If, perchance, thou permittest the staff of justice to swerve, let it be not by the weight of a gift, but by that of mercy. If it should happen thee to give judgment in the cause of one who is thine enemy, turn thy thoughts away from thy injury and fix them on the justice of the case. Let not thine own compassion blind thee in another man's cause, for the errors thou wilt thus commit will be most frequently irremediable, or if not, only to be remedied at the expense of thy good name and even of thy fortune. If any handsome woman come to seek justice of thee, turn away thine eyes from her tears and thine ears from her lamentations, and consider deliberately the merits of her demand. If thou wouldst not have thy reason swept away by her weeping, and thy rectitude by her sighs. Abuse not by word him whom thou hast to punish indeed, for the pain of punishment is enough for the unfortunate, without the addition of thine objurgations. Bear in mind that the culprit who comes under thy jurisdiction is but a miserable man subject to all the propensities of our depraved nature, and so far as may be in thy power, show thyself lenient and forbearing. For though the attributes of God are all equal, to our eyes that of mercy is brighter and loftier than that of justice. If thou followest these precepts and rules, Sancho, thy days will be long, thy fame eternal, thy reward abundant, thy felicity unutterable. Thou wilt marry thy children as thou wouldst, they and thy grandchildren will bear titles. Thou wilt live in peace and concord with all men. And when life draws to a close, death will come to thee in calm and ripe old age, and the light and loving hands of thy great-grandchildren will close thine eyes. What I have thus far addressed to thee are instructions for the adornment of thy mind. Listen now to those which tend to that of the body. Chapter 43. Of the second set of counsels Don Quixote gave Sancho Panza. Who, on hearing the foregoing discourse of Don Quixote, would not have set him down for a person of great good sense and greater rectitude of purpose? But as has been frequently observed in the course of this great history, he only talked nonsense when he touched on chivalry, and in discussing all other subjects, showed that he had a clear and unbiased understanding, so that at every turn his acts gave the lie to his intellect, and his intellect to his acts. But in the case of these second counsels that he gave Sancho, he showed himself to have a lively turn of humour, and displayed conspicuously his wisdom, and also his folly. Sancho listened to him with the deepest attention, and endeavoured to fix his counsels in his memory, like one who meant to follow them, and by their means bring the full promise of his government to a happy issue. Don Quixote, then, went on to say, "With regard to the mode in which thou shouldst govern thy person and thy house, Sancho, the first charge I have to give thee is to be clean, and to cut thy nails, not letting them grow as some do, whose ignorance makes them fancy that long nails are an ornament to their hands, as if those excrescences they neglect to cut were nails, and not the talons of a lizard-catching kestrel, a filthy and unnatural abuse. Go not ungirt and loose, Sancho, for disordered attire is a sign of an unstable mind, unless, indeed, the slovenliness and slackness is to be set down to cunning, as was the common opinion in the case of Julius Caesar. Ascertain cautiously what thy office may be worth, and if it will allow thee to give liveries to thy servants, give them respectable and serviceable rather than showy and gay ones, and divide them between thy servants and the poor. That is to say, if thou canst clothe 6 pages, clothe 3 and 3 poor men, and thus thou wilt have pages for heaven and pages for earth. The vainglorious never think of this new mode of giving liveries. Eat not garlic nor onions, lest they find out thy boorish origin by the smell.
Walk slowly and speak deliberately, but not in such a way as to make it seem thou art listening to thyself, for all affectation is bad. Dine sparingly and sup more sparingly still, for the health of the whole body is forged in the workshop of the stomach. Be temperate in drinking, bearing in mind that wine in excess keeps neither secrets nor promises. Take care, Sancho, not to chew on both sides of your mouth at once, and not to eruct in anybody's presence.
Eruct? Said Sancho. I don't know what that means.
To eruct, Sancho, said Don Quixote, means to belch, and that is one of the filthiest words in the Spanish language, though a very expressive one. And therefore nice folk have had recourse to the Latin, and instead of belch, say eruct, and instead of belches, say eructations. And if some do not understand these terms, it matters little, for custom will bring them into use in the course of time, so that they will be readily understood. This is the way a language is enriched. Custom and the public are all powerful there.
In truth, senor, said Sancho, one of the counsels and cautions I mean to bear in mind shall be this, not to belch, for I'm constantly doing it.
Eruct, Sancho, not belch, said Don Quixote.
Eruct I shall say henceforth, and I swear not to forget it, said Sancho.
Likewise, Sancho, said Don Quixote, thou must not mingle such a quantity of proverbs in thy discourse as thou dost. For though proverbs are short maxims, thou dost drag them in so often by the head and shoulders that they savour more of nonsense than of maxims.
God alone can cure that, said Sancho, for I have more proverbs in me than a book, and when I speak they come so thick together into my mouth that they fall to fighting among themselves to get out. That's why my tongue lets fly the first that come, though they may not be pat to the purpose. But I'll take care henceforward to use such as befit the dignity of my office. For in a house where there's plenty, supper is soon cooked, and he who binds does not wrangle, and the bell ringer's in a safe berth, and giving and keeping require brains.
That's it, Sancho, said Don Quixote. Pack, tack, string proverbs together. Nobody is hindering thee. My mother beats me, and I go on with my tricks. I am bidding thee avoid proverbs, and here in a second thou hast shot out a whole litany of them, which have as much to do with what we are talking about as over the hills of Úbeda.
Mind, Sancho, I do not say that a proverb aptly brought in is objectionable, but to pile up and string together proverbs at random makes conversation dull and vulgar.
When thou ridest on horseback, do not go lolling with thy body on the back of the saddle, nor carry thy legs stiff or sticking out from the horse's belly, nor yet sit so loosely that one would suppose thou wert on Dapple, for the seat on a horse makes gentlemen of some and grooms of others. Be moderate in thy sleep, for he who does not rise early does not get the benefit of the day. And remember, Sancho, diligence is the mother of good fortune, and indolence, its opposite, never yet attains the object of an honest ambition. The last counsel I will give thee, though it does not tend to bodily improvement, I would have thee carry carefully in thy memory, for I believe it will be no less useful to thee than those I have given thee already, and it is this. Never engage in a dispute about families, at least in the way of comparing them one with another. For necessarily one of those compared will be better than the other, and thou wilt be hated by the one thou hast disparaged, and get nothing in any shape from the one thou hast exalted. Thy attire shall be hose of full length, a long jerkin and a cloak a trifle longer, loose breeches by no means, for they are becoming neither for gentlemen nor for governors. For the present, Sancho, this is all that has occurred to me to advise thee. As time goes by and occasions arise, my instructions shall follow, if thou take care to let me know how thou art circumstanced.
Señor, said Sancho, I see well enough that all these things your worship has said to me are good, holy, and profitable. But what use will they be to me if I don't remember one of them? To be sure, that about not letting my nails grow and marrying again if I have the chance will not slip out of my head, but all that other hash, muddle, and jumble, I don't and can't recollect any more of it than of last year's clouds. So it must be given me in writing, for though I can't either read or write, I'll give it to my confessor to drive it into me and remind me of it whenever it is necessary.
Ah, sinner that I am, said Don Quixote, how bad it looks in governors not to know how to read or write. For let me tell thee, Sancho, when a man knows not how to read or is left-handed, it argues one of two things, either that he was the son of exceedingly mean and lowly parents, or that he himself was so incorrigible and ill-conditioned that neither good company nor good teaching could make any impression on him.
It is a great defect that thou labourest under, and therefore I would have thee learn at any rate to sign thy name.
I can sign my name well enough, said Sancho, for when I was steward of the brotherhood in my village, I learned to make certain letters, like the marks on bales of goods, which they told me made out my name. Besides, I can pretend my right hand is disabled and make someone else sign for me, for there's a remedy for everything except death. And as I shall be in command and hold the staff, I can do as I like. Moreover, he whose father is the mayor goes safe to trial, and I'll be governor, and that's higher than mayor. Only come and see. Let them make light of me and abuse me. They'll come for wool and go back shorn. Whom God loves, his house is known to him. The silly sayings of the rich pass for sores in the world. And as I'll be rich, being a governor, and at the same time generous, as I mean to be, no fault will be seen in me. Only make yourself honey, and the flies will suck you. As much as thou hast, so much art thou worth, as my grandmother used to say, and thou canst have no revenge of a man of substance.
Oh, God's curse upon thee, Sancho, here exclaimed Don Quixote. 60,000 devils fly away with thee and thy proverbs. For the last hour thou hast been stringing them together and inflicting the pangs of torture on me with every one of them. Those proverbs will bring thee to the gallows one day, I promise thee. Thy subjects will take the government from thee, or there will be revolts among them.
Tell me, where dost thou pick them up, thou booby? How dost thou apply them, thou blockhead? For with me, to utter one and make it apply properly, I have to sweat and labour as if I were digging.
By God, master mine, said Sancho, your worship is making a fuss about very little. Why the devil should you be vexed if I make use of what is my own? And I have got nothing else nor any other stock in trade except proverbs and more proverbs. And here are three just this instant come into my head, pat to the purpose and like pears in a basket. But I won't repeat them, for my name is now Silent Sancho.
That, Sancho, it is not, said Don Quixote, for not only art thou not silent, but thou art a pestilent prate and perversity. Still, I would like to know what three proverbs have just now come into thy memory, for I have been turning over mine own, and it is a good one, and none occurs to me.
What can be better, said Sancho, than never put thy thumbs between two back teeth? And to get out of my house, and what do you want with my wife, there is no answer, and whether the pitcher hits the stove or the stove the pitcher, it's a bad business for the pitcher, all which fit to a hair. For no one should quarrel with his governor, or him in authority over him, because he will come off the worst, as he does who puts his finger between two back, and if they are not back teeth, it makes no difference so long as they are teeth. And to whatever the governor may say, there's no answer, any more than to get out of my house and what do you want with my wife? And then, as for that about the stone in the pitcher, a blind man could see that, so that he who sees the mote in another's eye had need to see the beam in his own, that it be not said of himself the dead woman was frightened at the one with her throat cut, and your worship knows well that the fool knows more in his own house than the wise man in another's.
Nay, Sancho, said Don Quixote, the fool knows nothing, either in his own house or in anybody else's, for no wise structure of any sort can stand on a foundation of folly. But let us say no more about it, Sancho, for if thou governest badly, thine will be the fault and mine the shame. But I comfort myself with having done my duty in advising thee as earnestly and wisely as I could, and thus I am released from my obligations and my promise. God guide thee, Sancho, and govern thee in thy government, and deliver me from the misgiving I have that thou wilt turn the whole island upside down, a thing I might easily prevent by explaining to the Duke what thou art, and telling him that all that fat little person of thine is nothing else but a sackful of proverbs and sauciness.
"Señor," said Sancho, "if your worship thinks I'm not fit for this government, I give it up on the spot, for the mere black of the nail of my soul is dearer to me than my whole body, and I can live just as well, simple Sancho, on bread and onions, as governor on partridges and capons. And what's more, while we're asleep, we're all equal, great and small, rich and poor. But if your worship looks into it, you will see it was your worship alone that put me on to this business of governing, for I know no more about the government of islands than a buzzard. And if there's any reason to think that because of my being a governor the devil will get hold of me, I'd rather go, Sancho, to heaven than governor to hell."
"By God, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "for those last words thou hast uttered alone, I consider thou deservest to be governor of 1,000 islands. Thou hast good natural instincts, without which no knowledge is worth anything. Commend thyself to God, and try not to swerve in the pursuit of thy main object.
I mean, always make it thy aim and fixed purpose to do right in all matters that come before thee, for heaven always helps good intentions. And now let us go to dinner, for I think my lord and lady are waiting for us.
Chapter 44. How Sancho Panza was conducted to his government, and of the strange adventure that befell Don Quixote in the castle. It is stated, they say, in the true original of this history, that when Cide Hamete came to write this chapter, his interpreter did not translate it as he wrote it, that is, as a kind of complaint the Moor made against himself for having taken in hand a story so dry and of so little variety as this of Don Quixote, for he found himself forced to speak perpetually of him and Sancho, without venturing to indulge in digressions and episodes more serious and more interesting. He said, too, that to go on, mind, hand, pen, always restricted to writing upon one single subject, and speaking through the mouths of a few characters, was intolerable drudgery, the result of which was never equal to the author's labour, and that to avoid this he had in the first part availed himself of the device of novels like The Ill-Advised Curiosity and The Captive Captain, which stand, as it were, apart from the story, the others that are given there being incidents which occurred to Don Quixote himself and could not be omitted. He also thought, he says, that many, engrossed by the interest attaching to the exploits of Don Quixote, would take none in the novels, and pass them over hastily or impatiently without noticing the elegance and art of their composition, which would be very manifest were they published by themselves and not as mere adjuncts to the crazes of Don Quixote or the simplicities of Sancho. Therefore, in this second part, he thought it best not to insert novels, either separate or interwoven, but only episodes, something like them, arising out of the circumstances the facts present, and even these sparingly and with no more words than suffice to make them plain. And as he confines and restricts himself to the narrow limits of the narrative, though he has ability, capacity, and brains enough to deal with the whole universe, he requests that his labours may not be despised, and that credit be given him not alone for what he writes, but for what he has refrained from writing. And so he goes on with his story, saying that the day Don Quixote gave the counsels to Sancho, the same afternoon after dinner he handed them to him in writing, so that he might get someone to read them to him. They had scarcely, however, been given to him when he let them drop, and they fell into the hands of the Duke, who showed them to the Duchess, and they were both amazed afresh at the madness and wit of Don Quixote. To carry on the joke, then, the same evening they dispatched Sancho with a large following to the village that was to serve him for an island. It happened that the person who had him in charge was a majordomo of the Duke's, a man of great discretion and humour, and there can be no humour without discretion, and the same who played the part of the Countess Trifaldi in the comical way that has been already described. And thus qualified and instructed by his master and mistress as to how to deal with Sancho, he carried out their scheme admirably. Now, it came to pass that as soon as Sancho saw this majordomo, he seemed in his features to recognize those of the Trifaldi, and turning to his master, he said to him, "Señor, either the devil will carry me off here on this spot, righteous and believing, or your worship will own to me that the face of this majordomo of the Duke's here is the very face of the distressed one." Don Quixote regarded the majordomo attentively, and having done so, said to Sancho, "There is no reason why the devil should carry thee off, Sancho, either righteous or believing, and what thou meanest by that I know not. The face of the distressed one is that of the majordomo, but for all that the majordomo is not the distressed one, for his being so would involve a mighty contradiction. But this is not the time for going into questions of the sort, which would be involving ourselves in an inextricable labyrinth. Believe me, my friend, we must pray earnestly to our Lord, that he deliver us both from wicked wizards and enchanters." "It is no joke, señor," said Sancho, "for before this I heard him speak, and it seemed exactly as if the voice of the Trifaldi was sounding in my ears. Well, I'll hold my peace, but I'll take care to be on the lookout henceforth for any sign that may seem to confirm or do away with this suspicion." "Thou wilt do well, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "and thou wilt let me know all thou discoverest, and all that befalls thee in thy government." Sancho at last set out, attended by a great number of people. He was dressed in the garb of a lawyer, with a gaban of tawny, watered camlet over all, and a montera cap of the same material, and mounted a la jineta upon a mule. Behind him, in accordance with the Duke's orders,
followed Dapple with brand-new ass trappings and ornaments of silk, and from time to time Sancho turned round to look at his ass, so well pleased to have him with him that he would not have changed places with the Emperor of Germany. On taking leave, he kissed the hands of the Duke and Duchess and got his master's blessing, which Don Quixote gave him with tears, and he received blubbering. Let worthy Sancho go in peace, and good luck to him, gentle reader. And look out for 2 bushels of laughter which the account of how he behaved himself in office will give you. In the meantime, turn your attention to what happened to his master the same night, and if you do not laugh thereat, at any rate you will stretch your mouth with a grin, for Don Quixote's adventures must be honoured either with wonder or with laughter. It is recorded, then, that as soon as Sancho had gone, Don Quixote felt his loneliness, and had it been possible for him to revoke the mandate and take away the government from him, he would have done so. The Duchess observed his dejection, and asked him why he was melancholy. Because, she said, if it was for the loss of Sancho, there were squires, duennas, and damsels in her house who would wait upon him to his full satisfaction.
"The truth is, Señora," replied Don Quixote, "that I do feel the loss of Sancho, but that is not the main cause of my looking sad. And of all the offers your excellence makes me, I accept only the good will with which they are made, and as to the remainder, I entreat of your excellence to permit and allow me alone to wait upon myself in my chamber."
"Indeed, Señor Don Quixote," said the Duchess, "that must not be. 4 of my damsels, as beautiful as flowers, shall wait upon you."
"To me," said Don Quixote, "they will not be flowers, but thorns to pierce my heart. They, or anything like them, shall as soon enter my chamber as fly. If your Highness wishes to gratify me still further, though I deserve it not, permit me to please myself and wait upon myself in my own room. For I place a barrier between my inclinations and my virtue, and I do not wish to break this rule through the generosity your Highness is disposed to display towards me. And, in short, I will sleep in my clothes sooner than allow anyone to undress me."
"Say no more, Señor Don Quixote, say no more," said the Duchess. "I assure you I will give orders that not even a fly, not to say a damsel, shall enter your room. I am not the one to undermine the propriety of Señor Don Quixote, for it strikes me that among his many virtues the one that is preeminent is that of modesty. Your worship may undress and dress in private and in your own way, as you please and when you please, for there will be no one to hinder you. And in your chamber you will find all the utensils requisite to supply the wants of one who sleeps with his door locked, to the end that no natural needs compel you to open it. May the great Dulcinea del Toboso live 1,000 years, and may her fame extend over all the surface of the globe, for she deserves to be loved by a knight so valiant and so virtuous. And may this kind heaven infuse zeal into the heart of our governor Sancho Panza, to finish off his discipline speedily, so that the world may once more enjoy the beauty of so grand a lady." To which Don Quixote replied, "Your Highness has spoken like what you are. From the mouth of a noble lady nothing bad can come, and Dulcinea will be more fortunate and better known to the world by the praise of your Highness than by all the eulogies the greatest orators on earth could bestow upon her." "Well, well, Señor Don Quixote," said the Duchess, "it's nearly supper-time, and the Duke is probably waiting. Come, let us go to supper, and retire to rest early, for the journey you made yesterday from Candia was not such a short one but that it must have caused you some fatigue."
"I feel none, Señora," said Don Quixote, "for I would go so far as to swear to your excellence that in all my life I never mounted a quieter beast or a pleasanter-paced one than Clavileño, and I don't know what could have induced Malambruno to discard a steed so swift and so gentle and burn it so recklessly as he did."
"Probably," said the Duchess, "repenting of the evil he had done to the Trifaldi and company, and others, and the crimes he must have committed as a wizard and enchanter, he resolved to make away with all the instruments of his craft, and so burned Clavileño as the chief one, and that which mainly kept him restless, wandering from land to land. And by its ashes and the trophy of the placard, the valour of the great Don Quixote of La Mancha is established for ever."
Don Quixote renewed his thanks to the Duchess, and having supped, retired to his chamber alone, refusing to allow anyone to enter with him to wait on him. Such was his fear of encountering temptations that might lead or drive him to forget his chaste fidelity to his lady Dulcinea. For he had always present to his mind the virtue of Amadis, that flower and mirror of knight's errant.
He locked the door behind him, and by the light of 2 wax candles undressed himself. But as he was taking off his stockings, oh, disaster unworthy of such a personage, there came a burst not of size or anything belying his delicacy or good breeding, but of some 2 dozen stitches in one of his stockings that made it look like a window lattice. The worthy gentleman was beyond measure distressed, and at that moment he would have given an ounce of silver to have had 1/2 dram of green silk there. I say green silk because the stockings were green. Here, Sidi Hameti exclaimed as he was writing, "Oh, poverty, poverty! I know not what could have possessed the great Cordovan poet to call thee holy gift ungratefully received. Although a Moor, I know well enough from the intercourse I have had with Christians that holiness consists in charity, humility, faith, obedience, and poverty. But for all that, I say he must have a great deal of godliness who can find any satisfaction in being poor. Unless, indeed, it be the kind of poverty one of their greatest saints refers to, saying, 'Possess all things as though ye possessed them not,' which is what they call poverty in spirit. But thou, that other poverty, for it is of thee I am speaking now, why dost thou love to fall out with gentlemen and men of good birth more than with other people? Why dost thou compel them to cobble the cracks in their shoes, and to have the buttons of their coats one silk, another hair, and another glass? Why must their ruffs be always crinkled like endive leaves, and not crimped with a crimping iron?' From this we may perceive the antiquity of starch and crimped ruffs. Then he goes on, 'Poor gentleman of good family, always cockering up his honour, dining miserably and in secret, and making a hypocrite of the toothpick with which he sallies out into the street after eating nothing to oblige him to use it. Poor fellow, I say, with his nervous honour, fancying they perceive a league off the patch on his shoe, the sweat stains on his hat, the shabbiness of his cloak, and the hunger of his stomach.' All this was brought home to Don Quixote by the bursting of his stitches. However, he comforted himself on perceiving that Sancho had left behind a pair of travelling boots, which he resolved to wear the next day. At last he went to bed, out of spirits and heavy at heart, as much because he missed Sancho as because of the irreparable disaster to his stockings, the stitches of which he would even have taken up with silk of another colour, which is one of the greatest signs of poverty a gentleman can show in the course of his never-failing embarrassments. He put out the candles, but the night was warm and he could not sleep. He rose from his bed and opened slightly a grated window that looked out on a beautiful garden, and as he did so, he perceived and heard people walking and talking in the garden. He set himself to listen attentively, and those below raised their voices so that he could hear these words. "Urge me not to sing, Emerencia, for thou knowest that ever since this stranger entered the castle and my eyes beheld him, I cannot sing, but only weep. Besides, my lady is a light rather than a heavy sleeper, and I would not for all the wealth of the world that she found us here. And even if she were asleep and did not waken, my singing would be in vain, if this strange Aeneas, who has come into my neighbourhood to flout me, sleeps on and wakens not to hear it." "Heed not that, dear Altisidora," replied a voice. "The Duchess is no doubt asleep, and everybody in the house save the lord of thy heart and disturber of thy soul, for just now I perceived him open the grated window of his chamber, so he must be awake. Sing, my poor sufferer, in a low sweet tone to the accompaniment of thy harp, and even if the Duchess hears us, we can lay the blame on the heat of the night." "That is not the point, Emerencia," replied Altisidora. "It is that I would not that my singing should lay bare my heart, and that I should be thought a light and wanton maiden by those who know not the mighty power of love. But come what may, better a blush on the cheeks than a sore in the heart." And here a harp, softly touched, made itself heard. As he listened to all this, Don Quixote was in a state of breathless amazement, for immediately the countless adventures like this, with windows, gratings, gardens, serenades, love-makings and languishings that he had read of in his trashy books of chivalry, came to his mind. He at once concluded that some damsel of the Duchess's was in love with him, and that her modesty forced her to keep her passion secret. He trembled lest he should fall, and made an inward resolution not to yield. And commending himself with all his might and soul to his lady Dulcinea, he made up his mind to listen to the music. And to let them know he was there, he gave a pretended sneeze, at which the damsels were not a little delighted, for all they wanted was that Don Quixote should hear them. So having tuned the harp, Altisidora, running her hand across the strings,
began this ballad. O thou that art above in bed between the holland sheets, a-lying there from night till morn with outstretched legs asleep, O thou most valiant knight of all the famed Manchegan breed, of purity and virtue more than gold of Araby, give ear unto a suffering maid, well grown but evil starred, for those two sons of thine have lit a fire within her heart. Adventures seeking thou dost rove, to others bringing woe. Thou scatterest wounds, but ah, the balm to heal them dost withhold. Say, valiant youth, and so may God thy enterprises speed, didst thou the light mid Libya's sands or Yacca's rocks first see? Did scaly serpents give thee suck? Who nursed thee when a babe? Wert cradled in the forest rude or gloomy mountain cave? O Dulcinea may be proud, that plump and lusty maid, for she alone hath had the power a tiger fierce to tame. And she for this shall famous be, from Tagus to Jarama, from Manzanares to Genil, from Duero to Arlanza. Fain would I change with her, and give a petticoat to boot, the best and bravest that I have, all trimmed with gold galloon. Oh, for to be the happy fair thy mighty arms enfold, or even sit beside thy bed and scratch thy dusty poll. I rave. To favours such as these unworthy to aspire, thy feet to tickle were enough for one so mean as I. What caps, what slippers silver-laced would I on thee bestow, what damask breeches made for thee, what fine long holland cloaks? And I would give thee pearls that should as big as oak-galls show, so matchless big that each might well be called the great alone. Manchegan Nero, look not down from thy Tarpeian rock upon this burning heart, nor add the fuel of thy wrath. A virgin soft and young am I, not yet 15 years old. I'm only 3 months past 14, I swear upon my soul. I hobble not, nor do I limp, all blemish I'm without, and as I walk my lily locks are trailing on the ground. And though my nose be rather flat, and though my mouth be wide, my teeth like topazes exalt my beauty to the sky. Thou knowest that my voice is sweet, that is, if thou dost hear, and I am moulded in a form somewhat below the mean. These charms and many more are thine, spoils to thy spear and bow all. A damsel of this house am I, by name Altisidora. Here the lay of the heart-stricken Altisidora came to an end, while the warmly wooed Don Quixote began to feel alarm, and with a deep sigh he said to himself, Oh, that I should be such an unlucky knight that no damsel can set eyes on me but falls in love with me! Oh, that the peerless Dulcinea should be so unfortunate that they cannot let her enjoy my incomparable constancy in peace! What would ye with her, ye queens? Why do ye persecute her, ye empresses? Why ye pursue her, ye virgins of from 14 to 15? Leave the unhappy being to triumph. Rejoice and glory in the lot love has been pleased to bestow upon her in surrendering my heart and yielding up my soul to her. Ye love-smitten host, know that to Dulcinea only I am dough and sugar-paste, flint to all others. For her I am honey, for you aloes. For me Dulcinea alone is beautiful, wise, virtuous, graceful and high-bred, and all others are ill-favoured, foolish, light and low-born. Nature sent me into the world to be hers and no other's. Altisidora may weep or sing, the lady for whose sake they belaboured me in the castle of the Enchanted Moor may give way to despair, but I must be Dulcinea's, boiled or roast, pure, courteous and chaste, in spite of all the magic-working powers on earth. And with that he shut the window with a bang, and as much out of temper and out of sorts as if some great misfortune had befallen him, stretched himself on his bed, where we will leave him for the present, as the great Sancho Panza, who is about to set up his famous government, now demands our attention. Chapter 45. Of how the great Sancho Panza took possession of his island, and of how he made a beginning in governing. O perpetual discoverer of the Antipodes, torch of the world, eye of heaven, sweet stimulator of the water-coolers, Timbreus here, Phoebus there, now archer, now physician, father of poetry, inventor of music, thou that always risest and notwithstanding appearances, never settest. To thee, O Son, by whose aid man begetteth man, to thee I appeal to help me and lighten the darkness of my wit, that I may be able to proceed with scrupulous exactitude in giving an account of the great Sancho Panza's government. For without thee I feel myself weak, feeble, and uncertain. To come to the point, then. Sancho, with all his attendants, arrived at a village of some 1,000 inhabitants, and one of the largest the Duke possessed. They informed him that it was called the Island of Barataria, either because the name of the village was Baratario, or because of the joke by way of which the government had been conferred upon him. On reaching the gates of the town, which was a walled one, the municipality came forth to meet him, the bells rang out a peal, and the inhabitants showed every sign of general satisfaction, and with great pomp they conducted him to the principal church to give thanks to God, and then with burlesque ceremonies they presented him with the keys of the town, and acknowledged him as perpetual governor of the Island of Barataria. The costume, the beard, and the fat, squat figure of the new governor astonished all those who were not in the secret, and even all who were, and they were not a few. Finally, leading him out of the church, they carried him to the judgment seat and seated him on it, and the Duke's majordomo said to him,
"It is an ancient custom in this land, Senor Governor, that he who comes to take possession of this famous island is bound to answer a question which shall be put to him, and which must be a somewhat knotty and difficult one. And by this answer the people take the measure of their new governor's wit, and hail with joy or deplore his arrival accordingly."
While the majordomo was making this speech, Sancho was gazing at several large letters inscribed upon the wall opposite his seat, and as he could not read, he asked what that was that was painted on the wall. The answer was,
"Senor, there is written and recorded the day on which your lordship took possession of this island, and the inscription says, 'This day, the so-and-so of such-and-such a month and year, Senor Don Sancho Panza took possession of this island. Many years may he enjoy it.'"
"And whom do they call Don Sancho Panza?" asked Sancho.
"Your lordship," replied the majordomo, "for no other Panza but the one who is now seated in that chair has ever entered this island."
"Well, then, let me tell you, brother," said Sancho, "I haven't got the Don, nor has any one of my family ever had it. My name is plain Sancho Panza, and Sancho was my father's name, and Sancho was my grandfather's, and they were all Panzas, without any Dons or Donyas tacked on. I suspect that in this island there are more Dons than stones. But never mind. God knows what I mean, and maybe if my government lasts 4 days, I'll weed out these Dons that no doubt are as great a nuisance as the midges, they're so plenty. Let the majordomo get on with his question, and I'll give the best answer I can, whether the people deplore or not."
At this instant there came into the court 2 old men, one carrying a cane by way of a walking-stick, and the one who had no stick said,
"Senor, some time ago I lent this good man 10 gold crowns in gold to gratify him and do him a service, on the condition that he was to return them to me whenever I should ask for them. A long time passed before I asked for them, for I would not put him to any greater straits to return them than he was in when I lent them to him. But thinking he was growing careless about payment, I asked for them once and several times, and not only will he not give them back, but he denies that he owes them, and says I never lent him any such crowns, or if I did, that he repaid them, and I have no witnesses either of the loan or the payment, for he never paid me. I want your worship to put him to his oath, and if he swears he returned them to me, I forgive him the debt here and before God."
"What say you to this, good old man, you with the stick?" said Sancho. To which the old man replied,
"I admit, Senor, that he lent them to me, but let your worship lower your staff of justice, and as he leaves it to my oath, I'll swear on your staff that I gave them back and paid him really and truly."
The governor lowered the staff of justice, and as he did so, the old man who had the stick handed it to the other old man to hold for him while he made his oath, as if he found it in his way, and then laid his hand on the cross of the staff of justice, saying that it was true the 10 crowns that were demanded of him had been lent him, but that he had with his own hand given them back into the hand of the other, and that he, not recollecting it, was always asking for them. Seeing this, the great governor asked the creditor what answer he had to make to what his opponent said. He said that no doubt his debtor had told the truth, for he believed him to be an honest man and a good Christian,
and he himself must have forgotten when and how he had given him back the crowns, and that from that time forth he would make no further demand upon him. The debtor took his stick again, and bowing his head, left the court. Observing this, and how, without another word, he made off, and observing, too, the resignation of the plaintiff, Sancho buried his hand in his bosom, and remained for a short space in deep thought, with the forefinger of his right hand on his brow and nose. Then he raised his head, and bade them call back the old man with the stick, for he had already taken his departure. They brought him back, and as soon as Sancho saw him, he said, "Honest man, give me that stick, for I want it."
"Willingly," said the old man. "Here it is, senor."
And he put it into his hand. Sancho took it, and handing it to the other old man, said to him,
"Go, and God be with you, for now you are paid."
"Aye, senor," returned the old man. "Why, is this cane worth 10 gold crowns?
"Yes," said the governor, "or if not, I am the greatest dolt in the world. Now you will see whether I've got the headpiece to govern a whole kingdom."
And he ordered the cane to be broken in two, there in the presence of all. It was done, and in the middle of it they found 10 gold crowns. All were filled with amazement and looked upon their governor as another Solomon. They asked him how he had come to the conclusion that the 10 crowns were in the cane. He replied that, observing how the old man who swore gave the stick to his opponent while he was taking the oath, and swore that he had really and truly given him the crowns, and how as soon as he had done swearing he asked for the stick again, it came into his head that the sum demanded must be inside it. And from this, he said, it might be seen that God sometimes guides those who govern in their judgments, even though they may be fools. Besides, he had himself heard the curate of his village mention just such another case. And he had so good a memory that if it was not that he forgot everything he wished to remember, there would not be such a memory in all the island. To conclude, the old men went off, one crestfallen and the other in high contentment. All who were present were astonished, and he who was recording the words, deeds, and movements of Sancho could not make up his mind whether he was to look upon him and set him down as a fool or as a man of sense. As soon as this case was disposed of, there came into court a woman holding on with a tight grip to a man dressed like a well-to-do cattle dealer, and she came forward making a great outcry and exclaiming,
"Justice, Senor Governor, justice! And if I don't get it on earth, I'll go look for it in heaven. Senor Governor of my soul, this wicked man caught me in the middle of the fields here and used my body as if it was an ill-washed rag, and woe is me! Got from me what I had kept these 23 years and more, defending it against Moors and Christians, natives and strangers, and I always as hard as an oak, and keeping myself as pure as a salamander in the fire, or wool among the brambles, for this good fellow to come now with clean hands to handle me.
It remains to be proved whether this gallant here has clean hands or not," said Sancho. And turning to the man, he asked him what he had to say in answer to the woman's charge. He, all in confusion, made answer,
"Sirs, I am a poor pig-dealer, and this morning I left the village to sell, saving your presence, 4 pigs, and between dues and cribbings they got out of me little less than the worth of them. As I was returning to my village I fell in on the road with this good dame, and the devil who makes a coil and a mess out of everything yoked us together. I paid her fairly, but she, not contented, laid hold of me and never let go until she brought me here. She says I forced her, but she lies by the oath I swear or am ready to swear. And this is the whole truth and every particle of it."
The governor on this asked him if he had any money in silver about him. He said he had about 20 ducats in a leather purse in his bosom. The governor bade him take it out and hand it to the complainant. He obeyed, trembling. The woman took it, and making 1,000 salams to all, and praying to God for the long life and health of the senor governor who had such regard for distressed orphans and virgins, she hurried out of court with the purse grasped in both her hands, first looking, however, to see if the money it contained was silver. As soon as she was gone, Sancho said to the cattle dealer, whose tears were already starting, and whose eyes and heart were following his purse,
"Good fellow, go after that woman and take the purse from her, by force even, and come back with it here."
And he did not say it to one who was a fool or deaf, for the man was off like a flash of lightning and ran to do as he was bid. All the bystanders waited anxiously to see the end of the case, and presently both man and woman came back at even closer grips than before, she with her petticoat up and the purse in the lap of it, and he struggling hard to take it from her, but all to no purpose, so stout was the woman's defence, she all the while crying out,
justice from God and the world. See here, Senor Governor, the shamelessness and boldness of this villain, who in the middle of the town, in the middle of the street, wanted to take from me the purse your worship bade him give me. And did he take it? Asked the governor. Take it? Said the woman. I'd let my life be taken from me sooner than the purse. A pretty child I'd